This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTBM Pop Experience. Welcome back to another great edition of Pop Goes the Classics, where we are driving through all of the Disney animated films. I'm, of course, one of your tri-hosts of the show, Steve Riddle, and we have a very great episode on tap for you today because we are going to talk about a film that, in my opinion, is still one of the most underrated films that Disney has ever released to this point. I know that some may agree, some may disagree, but we are going to talk about it. But first, let me bring in my co-host. First, Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you, my dear?
I'm good. How are you this evening?
Good.
I love that, by the way, tri-host. I think we should use that more often. I really like that. Let's coin that and go with it.
Make it our own thing?
Yeah.
Well, let's bring in our other tri-host for the episode, of course, Mr. Andy Atherton. Andy, how are you, sir?
I'm going to try harder to use it. That's Miranda. It's just not catching on, Miranda. I like that tri-host. It's cool. I'm good. This is a movie that, it is underrated. I did love it as a kid. I think it. I saw a little. As an adult, I guess more of the flaws had kind of my eyes were open to a little bit of the movie, but I still enjoyed it. I gotta say, it's not a bad movie. I just remember some other aspects of it, I guess, being more just meaning a little bit more to the movie, and some parts are a little underwhelming at times. That's all.
Interesting. Well, the movie we are talking about here is the 23rd film that Disney released, and it was the second one of 1977. We, of course, talked about The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh last time. That was released earlier in the year. And this, of course, this film was released June 22nd, 1977, and that is The Rescuers. It is based on a story called The Rescuers and Miss Bianca by Marjorie Sharp. It actually took me a while to see it. It wasn't one I watched originally when I was little. I actually, when we get to the sequel a few years later, that was more one of my favorite films of all time. But it took me a while before I finally saw this one. Miranda, what do you remember the first time you saw The Rescuers, and what was your first opinions of the film?
I was little when I watched this one, which I think I'm really repetitive with, but if you're new here, my grandfather was really good at keeping a fantastic VHS collection, and my other grandparents had the Disney Channel, which we did not at home, so I actually got to see a lot of movies as a kid, thanks to both sets of grandparents, and I remember watching it and really, really enjoying it. I am with you that I think the second that we will get to later coming up, I liked it better. And I do kind of agree with you, Andy, that rewatching it as an adult, I felt a little differently about this film. But overall, it is one that I do think is underrated and not talked about enough.
So the film opens in a abandoned steamship in the bayou of Louisiana, where we see a young girl walking out on the ship. She is being overwatched by two very vicious looking crocodiles, and we see she drops a bottle with a message in it into the river. And we then get our opening sequence where we see the bottle go on a great journey where it eventually reaches New York City. And Miranda, I don't know about you, but this was actually one of my favorite intros to one of the Disney films. Just seeing the imagery of seeing this bottle through the ocean, and just the music, and it reminded me a lot of a film that'll come out a few years later, An American Tale. It's funny we kind of mentioned that film because one of the animators on this film was a gentleman by the name of Don Bluth, who we'll get to know a little bit later, because it was definitely, I don't know about you guys, but The animation for this film felt very different, and it was kind of it's kind of talked about how the nine old men, who were a group of animators and producers and directors that have been with Disney since the very beginning, since Snow White, and they've been a major part of every film to this point. They were starting to get phased out a little bit. You know, they were getting older, they were retiring, and a new young group of animators, Bluth being one of them, were looking to make the name themselves in Disney's animation department. But like I said, Miranda, what did you think of the opening sequence here?
I think it's very well done. I've noticed here lately from the past few films that they have watched, Disney really likes to put notes in bottles, or people in bottles, per se, which I think is done well. But I didn't realize until we talked about this one. I'm like, wait, last month we also talked about Note in a Bottle, and then Alice was in a bottle, and then there's a lot of bottle tossing happening. But overall, I think it's very well done. And you're right. There is a shift, so to speak, in the animation, if ever so slightly. It does feel different. And I think that's one of the things that maybe makes it one of my favorites, or on the list of favorites, is because it does make that change. And it makes it slightly, but it makes it in an interesting and intriguing way.
Mm-hmm. Andy?
Yeah, we're going to see this shift for the next, like, I think 4 or 5 movies. Yeah, this new, whole new breed comes in. You kind of move forward, you know, with the animation style a little bit. You know, the lines are slightly changed. You know, Glenn Keane also, this is his first film. Yeah, it was kind of a dark and ominous beginning of this movie, you know, with Penny and the two crocodiles. Trying to figure out where Devil's Bayou is. I mean, I'm thinking it's Louisiana, but it could be Florida. I mean, that was if that bottle
it has is to go, Louisiana.
If that bottle then has to make some trip to, you know, go around Florida to get up to New York, then because I assume that's the way it would go, right? Wasn't I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I really enjoyed the opening of this, and especially when we get to the United Nations, where we see like the mouse counterpart for every ambassador or diplomat. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yep. So the bottle does land in New York, where it's retrieved by a few mice. And like you said, we then go to the United Nations, where there is a hidden mouse equivalent that we see called the Rescue Aid Society. And we see that each country is represented by a specific mouse. And it's here where we meet our main characters. First, there is Bernard, who is the janitor of the group. He's of course voiced by the great Bob Newhart, but even though he's just a janitor, he seems to be very at least liked by everyone. He's says hello to everybody, and he knows all the words to the Rescue Aid Society theme, which the group sings. And it's at this point where we meet the Hungarian representative, Miss Bianca, who is voiced by Eva Gabor, who many remember voiced Duchess in the Aristocats. So then we go inside. They have Bernard retrieve the letter out of the bottle, and we see kind of Bernard's, he's very superstitious because he climbs up the comb, which he calls a ladder, but he hesitates because there's 13 steps in it, but eventually he overcomes that. He goes into the bottle, takes out the message, and we see that it is addressed to a orphanage called Morningside, and we see that again, and we read that the girl who delivered it, like you said, his name is Penny, and she's asking for help. So Bianca volunteers to go on the journey, and they tell her that she could probably do with some help. And of course, we see that Bianca is well liked by all the representatives, because all the men are, you know, asking for to be her partner. But she ends up choosing Bernard, which kind of shocks everybody, including Bernard particularly. So, Andy, what did you think of this introduction to Bernard and Bianca?
Mm-hmm. Well, great voice casting here. You know, we got Bob Newhart as the kind of understated. I'm just like the guy. I work here. I'm not really one of these diplomats. Kind of, he's the maintenance guy. And then you have the Gabor sister with talent. Eva Gabor is the voice of beautifully voices Miss Bianca. I think it's a great pairing. She is like smart, elegant. Beautiful, I guess, for a mouse, and Bernard's just like a regular guy, and she doesn't really see that. I mean, she sees him that he's got this talent, and and that he is somebody that she'd love to be partnered with. You know, I think they're a nice pairing because they play off each other quite well.
Miranda, what did you think of this intro to Bernard and Bianca?
I totally agree with Andy, and they do pair together very well. The voice acting is phenomenal. I mean, Bob Newhart just is. I don't think you could have gotten anyone else. It's possible you could have gotten someone else for Miss Bianca, but not for Bernard. I just don't see that. And Miss Bianca is also just phenomenal. But I will say, as an adult living 20 minutes from the Hungarian border, I do have questions as to Miss Bianca survived to make it to New York. But I digress. I actually used to know all the words to the Rescue Aid Society song. Bernard, because he's just so sweet and he just wants so bad to be, he doesn't want to be a diplomat, but he wants to be part of something and he believes in what they're doing. So I think it makes it even more special when she chooses him to go with her. And I love that they're like, oh, we're going to go help this little girl. Like, no questions asked. Like, okay, we're going to help this little girl.
All right. So from there, we see them traverse the streets on a rainy night in New York City. And after a quick after they attempt to go through the zoo, where Bernarda accidentally stirs up a lion and they get scared out of there, they'd eventually reach the orphanage where they find a box that has Penny's things in it. And it's here that they meet a old house cat named Rufus. And he tells, and they talk to him about Penny. And we see a quick flashback of the last time Rufus was with Penny at the orphanage. And I think key note here is that Penny always carries with her a teddy bear who, if you look closely, is actually our good friend Winnie the Pooh. Is an orange bear with the red shirt. Doesn't have the name, though. She just refers to him as Teddy. And and she and Rufus talk about how she was denied adoption because nobody wanted to pick her. And he tries to give her – to tell her that there's still hope. And he tells her about the bluebird and how it represents luck. And at that point, we go back to real time where he says about how Penny – it was said that Penny ran away from the orphanage, but he says that she may have had some interactions with a lady who had tried to take her in her car, and he directs them to a pawn shop that the lady owns. So, Andy, what did you think of this kind of little bit here with Rufus and the kind of story about how Penny is kind of getting downtrodden because she's not getting it adopted?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Rufus being like kind of our exposition guy here to kind of tell us what really happened to Penny. I mean, it's a little scary, I guess, if you really think about it. She basically got abducted and she, you know, is now because of, you know, she's an orphan, so they don't think she'd be missed. And, you know, of her, I guess, her physical aspect of what they ultimately need her to take care of, so to speak. I think it's meant to pull at your heartstrings, but again, this is one of those parts where I guess adult me was kind of like having issues with it a little bit because of, you know, she didn't go, I'm guessing she didn't go willingly to Madame Medusa's pawn shop and, you know, to where she ends up, not saying like, you know, she's in peril, so to speak, in the, kind of the icky term of it, but, you know, in terms of a story element or plot element, a device here, I mean, it's something that doesn't translate well for me to today, I guess, but, you know, in terms of Rufus, you know, he was really good. I mean, I didn't really put two and two together about Winnie the Pooh being her teddy, but, you know, we have to get her to where she has to be, and that's how they did it. I don't know if that's the way in the book. I mean, I don't know, but it's, you know, I guess it's fine, but that was one of the parts I had umbrage with, I guess.
Kind of one of those early Easter egg kind of appearances that Disney's like so famous for now, where they put like characters from their past films in the, like more modern films, and you kind of like you find it like, oh hey, I remember that. Mm-hmm. So Miranda, what did you think?
So I enjoy Rufus, right, overall, and I like that he's not, because a lot of times we get cats that are, like, evil, like, they've been mean up to this point, and he's not, and he explains everything in a way that, like, because they are mice, it's the best way for them to get information, and I think it was done, that was done really well. But I have to agree with Andy that when you rewatch this as an adult, and then as an adult parent, I'm not saying people that aren't parents wouldn't feel the same way, but as an adult parent, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
When you think mm-hmm. about it, I mean, you're thinking about the fact that, like, this girl's life is already miserable. Like, they make it out to be like, the orphanage isn't like the orphanage from Annie, but it's an orphanage. And it's not great. Like, most orphanages aren't, you know, lollipops and cupcakes. They're not great places. So, I mean, she probably already doesn't have a wonderful life because she's not being adopted. She's in this orphanage, you know. Even if it is a nicer one, like, you're in an orphanage. And then she's abducted. Like, this is terrifying. And the woman that takes her is just a foul woman. I actually remember for the first time in Disney history being actually a little scared of her. And like, I didn't know why I was, because she was just kind of a villain, but she's a little scary. She's like, it's like if Tammy Faye Baker were, and like, yeah, she's horrible.
Well, Bernard and Bianca end up going to the pawn shop where we meet the owner, who's Madame Medusa, and she ends up getting a phone call from her assistant, Mr. Snoops, who is down in the bayou, and they talk about the reason that they have Penny is because they're using her to find this very rare diamond called the Devil's Eye. And Medusa, after learning that Penny has been sending these messages in bottles to try to have somebody help her, decides to go down there herself. So Bernard and Bianca end up sneaking into her suitcase, but being that Medusa is a very reckless driver, as we see her driving through. Right. The suitcase ends up getting flown out of the car, so Bernard and Bianca had to find another way to get there. And it's funny you mention Cruella, because originally Cruella was going to be the villain of this film, but they decided against it and ended up going with Medusa. So... Miranda, you already kind of mentioned a little bit, but what did you think of this intro here to Medusa?
She's scary. Like, you know, she's crazy. She does have that Cruella flair, and I think there's something done really well with both of these characters, Madame Medusa and Cruella, both, where they're real people. Other villains we've come across in the past have had supernatural powers or, you know, something behind them. Like, you know, the evil queen is a witch, you know, or Maleficent is whatever she is. And I think that's what makes Cruella and Madame Medusa even scarier, is they are just greedy, nasty people, essentially. It is a good introduction to her, because I think that's their whole point, is you don't want to like her. They don't want you to like her in by any means. So that's accomplished.
Hey. Andy, what did you think of this intro to Medusa, and how different would the film have been had it been Cruella as the villain?
Again, this is another point where I was like, I thought we're kind of, my grade went down a little bit, because it is, I noticed it was great value Cruella to me. You know, she, you know, she drives a little bit. She's like Cruella, but she's not like, she's just greedy. She doesn't have like a weird obsession with, you know, fur coats. But I, Madame Medusa, it's, she's a, you know, somebody who, a villain who I thought more of until like I watched this and I'm like, yeah, she's just greedy. She looks like maybe she used to be a stripper or something, you know. Her boobs are practically hanging out of her dress, and, you know, she dresses like, you know, a streetwalker. I mean, you know, with a lot of makeup and everything. And it's really derivative of Cruella de Vil. It was kind of like, you know, we want Cruella in this, but we don't want Cruella. So what do you do? And it's like, it seems like, you know, they kept maybe animating the sequence and going back to the bosses like, No. Okay, what about this? No. Oh, wait, you got it. And it's like the guy, they're probably whispering something. It's just like Cruella de Vil here kind of thing. You know, I think she's fine. You know, she's definitely a lower level villain. I mean, she's just greedy and just a nasty person. But she doesn't really, I mean, you know, they didn't flesh her out enough. Like, we didn't get enough of her backstory where, you know, how come she became obsessed with finding the devil's eye. Is that what the jewel's called, I believe? Yeah, so it was, I don't know, like I said, like, she's great value, Cruella.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to put it. So after Bernard and Bianca get left behind, they end up going to a nearby airport where they go onto the roof and find an air service to help them, an Albatross air service. And this is where we meet Orville, the Albatross, as he flies in from a previous assignment. And he flies very majestically, like Bianca says, but could do a little bit better with his landings. He's not too good with those. And Bernard at one point even says to Bianca, you know, maybe we should take the train instead. But Orville kind of convinces them to trust them. So they end up getting on his, you know, they get on his back and they end up flying through the city off to Louisiana, to the Devil's Bayou. And it's here that we get a very kind of an underrated song, in my opinion, called Tomorrow is Another Day, as Bianca and Bernard start to actually get a little closer in their relationship. And of course, I would be remiss not to mention the controversy that followed this film. For those that remember, in 1999, when the film was re-released on home video, several million copies of the film had to be recalled because it was discovered that during the scene where Bernard and Bianca are flying through the city, if you pause the film at a certain point, you will see that there is a blurry image of a woman who is topless in one of the windows. So, needless to say, that's definitely kind of stirred up a little bit of a hornet's nest when it came to this film. So, Andy, what did you think of this intro to Orville? And what do you think of Tomorrow is Another Day as a song?
I enjoy it. Orville's one of the high points of the movie for me. It's funny, though, when they, you know, they walk in, like, Devil's Bayou is really that common a destination, I guess, because it's on the port when they walk in. That's where, you know, not New Orleans, not Miami, not Chicago, Devil's Bayou. But I did enjoy him. I love the sequence where he, you know, he takes off and it does become an ongoing gag with Bernard. You know, we should take a train. I think he's afraid of flying. I think he's just kind of afraid of what he sees from Orville from the beginning when he lands. I think the song is fine. I mean, I think it's good, but you know, I kind of like this, and the movie, you know, I mean, we get to Devil's Bayou and we meet, you know, one of the, you know, we'll get to him in a minute. One of the better characters, I guess, you know, in the movie that one of the things I really remembered as a kid from when I was a kid watching this, it was a standout, but Orville is definitely one of the high points of this movie for me.
Miranda, what did you think of Orville's introduction and the song?
I think Orville is hysterical. I think he's a much welcome introduction. I do think it's funny that they decided to fly Albatross, but I think that's what adds kind of like the fun part of the movie, because this movie is really heavy, whether you're an adult or a kid. Like, basically what they're doing, they're going to rescue a child that's been abducted by a greedy woman that may or may not have been a streetwalker. So he makes it fun. The song is very endearing. I think it's very sweet, and I remember enjoying it. It's not one that, like, there are some songs that when people mention them, I can, you know, in my head hear it. It's not one that I can do that, but I remember really enjoying it. I remember in my rewatch, it, like, I, you know, picking right up and being like, oh yes, this song, and you can kind of hum along. And I think it's needed in the spot that it's put, because you're right. It is trying to convey that they are getting closer, because I can imagine flying Albatross from New York to New Orleans. That's a really long trip. So clearly this is taking place over quite some time, and their relationship would blossom during that.
Mm-hmm. So then we go back to the bayou, where we see Penny trying to make another attempt at an escape. But Medusa sends her two crocodiles, Brutus and Nero, after her while she combs the swamp in a swamp boat. At the same time, her associate, who we meet for the first time, Mr. Snoops, sets off some fireworks to light up the sky so that Medusa can get a good look at this. At around the same time, Orville, Bianca, and Bella, and Bernard are showing up, and they fly right into the path of the fireworks, and they end up crashing into the bayou. And this is where we meet two local muskrats, Ellie Mae and Luke, who take Bernard and Bianca into their care. And Orville, unfortunately, gets caught up as he's trying to fly back into the air. He gets caught up in Medusa's boat and gets shot out the exhaust and gets all black and blue. And he ends up flying away, and we actually don't see him again. Pretty much for the rest of the film, which I thought was kind of unfortunate, because like you said, he is a good highlight of the film. But Ellie Mae, Luke end up hooking up Bernard and Bianca with a dragonfly named Evinrude, who helps them use a leaf to scan the swamp, just as Brutus and Nero find Penny and bring her back to Medusa. So, Miranda, what did you think of the intro of Luke, Ellie Mae, and Evinrude? And do you think Orville was very underutilized in the film?
I think Orville could have been used maybe just a little bit more. He is a really funny character. I remember my brothers both being really drawn to his character, so maybe he was a little underutilized. Honestly, Evinrude is one of my favorites, and I think he kind of gets played homage to much later when we get to like Princess and the Frog. There's maybe some throwback to him, or I could be reading into that too much. I really enjoy his character, but I think the little side characters that they have created for you to like are all done very well.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Andy?
Yeah, I would like to have seen Orville, but I kind of don't know where he could have fit in. I mean, you know, we do get some similar characters in later movies to them. I mean, and Evinrude, I love Evinrude, you know, a character that really just emotes without talking. When I was doing research, they wanted to make a Rescuers TV show, which ended up morphing into Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and I think Zipper was Evinrude, and that was his kind of like his homage to him. I like the other characters. I mean, I you know, again, it's the adult eyes with the one with Luke with the moonshine having to wake himself up here, but I did enjoy. I like them though. And Nero, I really like Nero and Brutus too. They were very good henchmen. They're kind of like the forerunners of Flotsam and Jetsam, who we're gonna see in The Little Mermaid. But I want to know, how does Penny tell them apart? Because I'm watching this and I'm like, how does she know which one is Brutus and which one is Nero? I don't think they give them any distinctness to them. But I always know that Brutus is usually the one that's got her. And Nero's the one that gets Teddy. That's the only difference I can really spot.
Yeah, I don't know. They never really, kind of expanded on that, how you tell the two apart. So
yeah, they could have given them collars or something.
Yeah.
Right? Or maybe like one had a distinct feature that the other one didn't. Yeah. So yeah, very interesting. Very weird. So at one point, Bernard and Bianca get on the boat. The riverboat, and Brutus and Nero end up chase them around, and they go into a pipe organ where one tries to one plays the keys to get them to fly out through the pipes, while the other one tries to catch them. But they do end up escaping, and eventually we see Medusa kind of talk to Snoops about what they're going to do about Penny, and Medusa says she's going to try to reason with Penny and play nice with her. Which leads to a very kind of awkward moment between the two, in my opinion. And at one point, Penny says, she's only doing this because she wants them to take her back to the orphanage so that she could be adopted. And, you know, Medusa's kind of like, oh, no one will ever adopt you. You're too homely, which is very, very kind of, it's, you know, very insulting. And eventually, Penny returns to her room and we hear another song, kind of almost sung to Penny that only she could hear. It's called Someone's Waiting for You. And she eventually kind of prays to the stars, you know, asking for help. And that's where Bernard and Bianca make their presence known to her. And they say that they're going to try to help her. And they eventually come up with a little bit of a plan of how they're going to trap Brutus and Nero in the elevator and use the fireworks to distract Medusa and Snoops long enough so they can use the speedboat to eventually escape. And at one point, Bernard says to Evinrude to go back to Ellie Mae and Luke so they can get everyone together. But unfortunately, Evinrude stumbles into a little colony of bats, and they end up chasing him around until he has to stay in a bottle to kind of protect himself. So, Andy, what did you think of this whole little sequence here, and what did you think of the plan that they have?
Well, don't sass me. That's you hear that quite a bit from Snopes here in this part. Yeah, this whole part with Medusa and Penny again. She's taking off her makeup, and you see truly how ugly she is as on the outside, as much as she is on the inside, and how she's just keeping Penny's spirits down. And, you know, I mean, you kind of put two and two together that they just need like somebody small to get into this hole, because as they make reference to, you know, in a cave, and you're guessing that, you know, they can't get in there themselves or else they would do that and they wouldn't need her. I enjoyed the sequence though, with the pipe organ with Brutus and Nero and Bianca and Bernard. I thought that was a lot of fun. They put them in peril, but also play for comedy. And, you know, poor Evinrude, you know, he's going to, you know, get the cavalry, so to speak. And these bats just have to come and mess everything up. And like the whole time you're sitting there going, no, I was really invested in Evinrude's, his well-being at this point. But, you know, this movie does, it has some ups and downs for me. And I think this was a mixture of both, this whole part of the movie with, you know, again, as Miranda has, you know, the way, you know, their Penny is treated and how mean, you know, an evil Medusa really is. And, you know, and also trying to reason with a child. Girl, don't even bother, because you can't. but it's, you know, they try to balance out well, we're going to give you this kind of like, you know, sequence that's like, you know, a little sad, but let's have this fun fight scene. And you know, you see her with these stick figure drawings of mom and dad by her bed. And, yeah, I mean, this movie has a lot of, it's an emotional roller coaster.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Miranda?
This whole section here, like that, because the song that you mentioned that's playing for Penny is during this part, and it's very sad. But at the same time, it's supposed to be kind of like giving hope to the whole thing. I think because we're kind of reaching the end of the movie, it's doing a good job of like trying to get everything in play and let you know what's happening next. And I think it does a good job with that. But something that happens in a lot of Disney movies for me when they're these longer, or not that they're long, but when they're a very thing, some of the older ones, we hit a certain point. And I know everybody's like, you've said this before. And I have. And I don't know why this happens. But there's usually a certain section of the movie that it's not that I lose interest, but it's like it feels like the tempo kind of changed. And maybe it's either too fast or too slow at that point, and I'm in and out of it. And as an adult, that's where I was at this part of the movie. And I honestly didn't remember much about the plan. And then I was like, oh, yes, there was a plan. So I think it's done very well, but something took me out of it. And maybe it's the sadness behind this. I'm not sure.
Also, I did want to quickly mention during the song, when they look out to the bayou, you see there's two deer standing in the marsh. And the first, when I saw that, it's the way it's animated, I was like, holy crap, that looks exactly like Bambi and his mom. Ooh. I don't know if either of you guys caught that.
Oh.
I have to go back and check it out.
Yeah, it's like very subtle, but again, it's one of those those Easter eggs, like hidden in plain sight that you don't notice the first thing you look at. You're like, oh my God, it's like light bulb clicks and you see it. So definitely keep an eye out for that. So then we go to the next morning where Medusa and Snoops take Penny back to the cave where they tell her, you know, they want her to go down there and find the diamond. So they send her down there and Bernard and Bianca are with Penny. And they go through the, you know, try to look through the cave. And then eventually they come across a skull. And when Penny holds the lantern up, they notice that the diamond that they're looking for is in the skull. So they basically have to try to get out of the skull. And at one point the tide starts to come through and, you know, Penny's like, you know, wants out. But Medusa, again, you know, in her evil ways, is basically saying, you know, you're staying down there until you get the diamond out, basically saying, I will risk you drowning to get it. So they find a nearby sword, which they use to pry the skull open, and they're able to get the diamond out. At one point, the water, you know, becomes too much, and they almost get overwhelmed, but they manage to get back to the bucket where Snoops and Medusa finally pull them out, and Medusa's, like, so excited about finally getting this diamond, and we see her true nature finally come out when she basically tells Snoops that she's not going to give him his half, much to his dismay, as Brutus and Nero take Penny back over to the steamboat. So, Miranda, what did you think of this sequence here, and how? Because I was reading up on the film, on the making of the film, and they said that the filmmakers really took the time and effort to make sure that they got this whole thing right by making. Mm-hmm. With raising the tension and, you know, the danger level of, you know, Penny and Bernard and Bianca trying to get this diamond out of the skull while the tide's rising. Did you feel the same way?
I did. I remember watching as a kid being like worried that they weren't going to be able to do this. I mean, even though you're a kid and you know it's all going to work out, like we've been bitten by movies before as kids that were born in and grew up in like the, you know, the 80s, 90s time frame. And sometimes things don't work out. I remember being genuinely scared that this was not going to work out, but I also remember being genuinely excited that she actually found this diamond and that unfortunately the horrible things that she'd been through kind of wasn't for nothing, if that makes any sense. Because at the end of the day, I don't really know if Medusa for sure knew it was there or just was, you know, adamant that it had to be there. I think they did a really good job though, because you're just enough scared as a kid that it's doing what it's supposed to do, but you're not so scared that you're upset and crying and don't want to finish it.
Mm-hmm. Andy, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree, but I think we should have gotten some backstory, or something on this, the Devil's Eye, like how Medusa came to you know of this or whatever legend, you know. It doesn't have to be a lot. It just seems like, you know, she's this, I don't know, I'm just gonna call her Lady of the Night, that is in with this kind of nebbishy nerdy dude, scientisty guy, and they're in, you know, by a grounded you know, half in the water riverboat here. And yeah, I mean I enjoyed the sequence of her in the you know, the cavern with the tide coming in and the tension and the peril and the danger. I did think that was really well done, but you know, I just wish there could have been a little more to the backstory on this jewel and how Medusa came to and Snopes came to find it, or think they know where it was. So that's all I'm asking for. And then of course, yeah, you know, she's in for herself and she doesn't care. So you kind of see that coming as well.
Mm-hmm. So then we see Everrude escape the bottle and barely make it past the bats as he makes it back to the house where Ellie Mae and Luke have gathered up several other local critters to help Bernard and Bianca when they need it. So they end up going on a charge. While that's going on, Medusa holds Snoops and Penny at gunpoint while we see that she has put the diamond in the teddy bear, and she's going to make her escape. But Bernard and Bianca make up a little tripwire to trip her up. And at that point, she loses control of the bear and Penny grabs it. And then Bernard and Bianca and the animals set their plan in motion. They end up trapping Brutus and Nero in the elevator. They set the fireworks off, destroy the boats, and Penny and all the animals get on the speedboat, where it stalls out at first, but they end up using some of Luke's moonshine to give it some gas and get it fired up, just as Medusa tries to, you know, get on board, but she ends up being caught up on a rope that's dragging her along. And at one point, the ship explodes and Brutus and Nero end up back in the water. And then Medusa is dragged on top of them and uses them as water skis. Eventually, the rope she's holding onto breaks and she ends up flying into one of the steam stacks of the boat. And Penny and all of them make their escape, as does Snoops. And he's looking back and he ends up laughing at Medusa, kind of laughing at her misfortune. And Medusa's left on the steam pipe, lamenting that she's lost her diamond, while Brutus and Nero turn on her and end up trying to eat her. And we never end up finding out what happened to the two of them. We just assume that, you know, either that they are just left there or whatever. But I, you know, thought that was kind of interesting. But Miranda, what did you think of this last little fight sequence?
I really enjoyed it. I think it's a good little fight sequence to close it out. To me, it's not overly done. I saw the stone being hidden in the bear, but I think it was also a good idea to do that. So overall, I just really enjoyed this whole little part here.
Andy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so watching this, I was kind of like, you know, taken out. Like, I was, as I watched it, I was kind of like, you know, my opinion was souring on it, not, you know, and I started to notice things. And when they, you know, we get to the scene with the local critters, and I'm thinking, this looks like they recycled Robin Hood here. They look like almost all of the villagers, and they're very similar. So I was kind of taken out for a moment. I mean, I really though enjoyed the sequence with Brutus and Nero getting turned into water skis. I think that's a fairly iconic image. Here, it's probably Madame Medusa's finest moment in this movie, so to speak, where, you know, she that's her villain moment, I guess. But I would have liked to have seen what happens to her at the end. Like, you know, she's left in the bayou here with two crocodiles nipping at her feet. But, you know, I kind of want to see where they ended up with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always like to have those loose ends tied up. Mm-hmm. So we return to New York, where we see the Rescue Aid Society watching on the news that the Devil's Eye has been donated to the Smithsonian, and that Penny has now been adopted by a family. We see that Bernard has become a new agent of the society as well. And just as they're watching the newscast on TV, Evan Rude shows up saying with a message. Saying that someone else is in need of help. And Bernard at one point basically said, oh, somebody, you know, needs to volunteer for it, trying to, you know, get out of it. But Bianca, of course, volunteers themselves for it, much to Bernard's dismay. And then we see that they are with Orville again. And they try to have, and this is in the middle of the winter, so they're trying to take off in the snow, but Orville gets blown off the roof instead by the wind, and Everroot has to help him. And we see the four of them flying off into the sunset as they go off on the next adventure, and we close out the film. So, Andy, what did you think of this little ending to the film?
It was a nice button on it, you know, where Happy Penny gets her happy ending with her parents. You know, Bernard and Bianca, you know, get that the shout out on the news program. And I enjoyed it because it kind of like gave a happy ending to the characters that needed them, you know, and you know, curious to see if we get more adventures with Bernard and Bianca.
Mm-hmm. Miranda?
I really like the closeout of this, and I like that Bernard and Bianca, you know, are still working together and have built a really good relationship. And it's like he finally is part of what he always wanted to be part of as well, there with Bernard.
Mm-hmm. And that will, like I said, that closes out the film, and it actually would go on to be pretty well received. As I said, you know, it was highly regarded when it first came out. did very well in the box office. And as we mentioned, it would get a sequel in 1990, which we will talk about here down the line. So, and as I said, I still think it's considered one of the more underrated films in Disney history. It's one that you don't hear a lot about. Because it came out at a very interesting time, because, you know, we talked about the films earlier in the decade, you know, Aristocats, Robin Hood, Winnie the Pooh, that are some of our personal favorites. And then the films from the first couple of films from the 1980s that are not as, you know, well received, that we'll talk about. And I feel like this film kind of got sandwiched in between them, because it's not one that a lot of people talk about as one of their favorites. And it's also one that, you know, many still think it is a very good film. So Miranda, what are your kind of final thoughts here on The Rescuers?
I overall did enjoy it. I do still think it's very underrated. There are parts that play out differently now that I'm an adult, overall, from the overalling arc of what's happening, the abduction, and, you know, the sad life of Penny, even though gets turned around. It's still a good watch. It's still, I don't know, it's sad and it's dark. Disney kind of does that to us sometimes, but overall it is still a good watch, and I love that we know there is more to come.
Andy, what are your final thoughts on The Rescuers?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what Miranda said. I mean, I did enjoy it as a kid. It is definitely a good movie. Now, let me say, I'm not, you know, I know I've been somewhat negative on this movie, just because it's, you know, I watched it through an adult eyes, because that's what I am now. But it's a very well-made movie. It is, the voice cast is excellent. I would have liked Madame Medusa to be fleshed out a little more and not so derivative of Cruella de Vil. But, you know, and Brutus and Nero, I really enjoy. I love, henchmen are some of my favorites throughout history. Pain and Panic, you know, Flotsam and Jetsam, you know, the Hyenas. I mean, you know, we're going to see lots of great henchmen. And I do really love Brutus and Nero. They're probably some of my favorites besides Evan Rude in this movie. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, a must watch. It probably lands somewhere in the middle to lower third, in my opinion, just based on, you know, really understanding the story and some of the elements. But it's still a good movie, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I still think it's very underrated. And I think it was definitely a good closeout to the decade of the 1970s. And, of course, when we come back in a month from now, we will hit our first film of the 1980s, which is, of course, The Fox and the Hound. So that's one definitely looking forward to get back into. I know that one has a very mixed opinion about it as well. But for now, let's talk about what else we have going on here. Miranda, where can everybody find you, and what have you got going on?
As always, you can find me pretty much mainly here on this feed in a few different shows. Andy and I have the Muppets podcast together. Of course, we have this one that our tripod here does every month. I was recently on a Laugh-In Theater that actually premiered over on Stream Lounge. If you wanted to watch us watch the movie, or if you just want to listen, it's on the feed as well. And you can find me on social media, mainly conversing with everyone in the Place to Be Nation group, or the Place to Be group, rather. And then on Instagram at Mom's a Nerd. And I'm now on TikTok. So, yeah, it's a lot of I've gotten really big into rock tumbling and rock hounding, if anyone knows what that is. And so most all of my videos are us doing our rock hounding and then the tumbling process. But yeah.
Are you geocaching too?
Yeah, we are also geocaching as well.
Wow, I had no idea what that was until I did that with one of my kids in the Scouts. I can't remember which one.
It's been so much fun. I highly recommend it. You can do it like pretty much all over the world. My brother-in-law and his wife have been doing it since the dawn of geocaching. And it's amazing to see their map because you create like a map when you create a geocaching account of where they've been. And I highly recommend it. It seems weird at first. I used to kind of make fun of them for it. But it's actually really cool. And it's something you can do along your adventures, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Andy, what do you got going on?
Oh, lots of stuff here on this feed. We have that Muppet Pod, like Miranda said, the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, Muppetational podcast.
So proud of you.
I have it in front of me, sorry. but, you know, we have Pop Goes to the Couch. By the time this goes up, maybe we'll have Miss Marvel on the Disney Plus. I don't know. We're always looking. We specialize on my version of Pop Goes to the Couch. That's with Tim Capel, Scott Shiflett, and Sean Kidd. We mostly figure, geek property, Star Wars. We did The Mandalorian. We're doing all the Marvel Disney Plus. But, you know, we want to do other shows, so I don't know what we could be doing at the moment. But check it out. It's going to be dropping weekly. My two live watch pods, that is Laughing Theater and Blockbuster Rewatch. I do those as, you know, pods only, and also I'm doing them on Stream Lounge now. So come on to Stream Lounge, look up Laughing Theater and Blockbuster Rewatch. Follow me under both of my accounts there, and you'll be alerted on whenever I have one scheduled. Also, follow Miranda, Mom's a Nerd, on mm-hmm. Stream Lounge. Follow, we have a lot of friends up there. You know, Tim, Jenny, you know, I'm sure Scott Crisco will be on there soon. Well, we will have a lot of Place to Be Nation presence on Stream Lounge doing all kinds of different fun live watches. So check it out. But, yeah, and check me out on the Wrestling Network. I do a Mount Rushmore wrestling version and Great Debate and Evolution. So lots of great stuff on the Quadapods.
Mm-hmm. You can usually find me over at the Place to Be Nation website. I have several articles going on over there. I have the Vintage Drop previewing, the box office report, as well as my full catalog of the wonderful reviews of Disney and my wonderful list of Disney, which should have wrapped up by the time this dropped. Where did this film land in that list? You'll have to read it to find out. And Miranda, of course, mentioned the Facebook page, where lots of great stuff going on over there. And yeah, so all that going on. So much great stuff. There is something literally for everyone. So we want to thank you guys for listening in here. Of course, we'll be back, like I said, next month with The Fox and the Hound. So for Andy Atherton and Miranda Berthold, I am Steve Riddle. This has been Pop Goes to Classics here on the PTV and Pop Experience. We will see you next time. And remember, tomorrow is always another day.